Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Cinco Squatto, Squat Cobbler number 5. I'm Kelly Toole at KellyThul on Twitter.
Hi, everybody. I'm Michael Belinsky at Official Pagan on just about everything. And I think I'm going to have to get Cinco Squatto tattooed to me somewhere. That is amazing.
I like it. I think it's a great band name. It's a great tattoo. And that should be our shirt. We got to come up with a shirt for Squat Cobbler. I think a Cinco Squatto shirt may be in order.
After we're done this, and this is something just to kind of tease the listeners with, remind me about Squat Cobbler shirts. I have something to possibly throw at you with that. So, a little tease for our listeners too. So
you're going to have to make your way all the way through the show to find out some key information about Squat Cobbler t-shirts. All right, we're going to break four episode tradition of Squat Cobbler a little bit today.
The long, illustrious tradition. The first four half-hour episodes of Squat Cobbler.
And this will be a regular disruption. Mike and I are going to work our way through the entire Alice Cooper catalog, album by album. And my surprise to Mike, I mentioned when we were starting, I said, I got a couple curves to throw your way through there. So what I had not checked with you in advance, but I think we should do anyway, is as we proceed through these, we should have, we can put it in the blog post, a kind of running ranking, kind of the Mike list and the Kelly list of the Alice Cooper albums, and to kind of see where we start to depart. So the sad news is, both you and I are going to have the same number one for this week, because we start off with one that I don't think is going to be staying in the number one position very long.
Right, and this is actually one where I think, by and large, we're mainly on the same page from the little bit we've discussed it.
I'm going to be surprised. I do think there's probably one or two albums coming up where we may have, I know in past conversations, maybe some really strongly different positions. But yeah, I think we're pretty much aligned here. So we are starting off with the first one recorded in June 1969, Pretties for You. This was the first album by the Alice Cooper Group. Frank Zappa was supposed to produce it. He got bored or busy or something and left. They typically credit the band on the album with producing it. But actually, Ian Underwood, who was in the Mothers of Invention, was Zappa, and Herb Cohan, who was Zappa's manager, were the individuals who actually produced this album. It did crack the Billboard Top 200, believe it or not, all the way up to position 193. So it didn't.
Hey, it's still an impressive feat.
I would never have guessed it for this album.
No, I would not have, honestly, either.
So this is their first album in this era. Strangely enough, they appeared in a movie called Diary of a Mad Housewife. There's a party scene and there's a band playing, and it's the Alice Cooper Group, and it's right around this time of this recording. But that's a little bit of the backstory. But this is their first album with a lot of songs on it. They had hung out, apparently, with Pink Floyd, and this is the Syd Barrett version of Pink Floyd, which was much more psychedelic, and I think that had some influence on this album. How about we kind of do just some general takeaways on the album first, and then I'm going to kind of touch on each of the songs a little bit, provide a couple pieces of commentary. But in general, Mike, in your Alice Cooper music buying progression, when did this one roll in?
This was actually pretty late into it for me. So just to give a little bit of a backstory, I grew up on Alice Cooper. My dad was a big Alice fan. So he had a lot of the Alice Cooper Group records, and that was something that I just grew up listening to. And then for me, a turning point into the Alice solo stuff, because my dad's Alice stuff really ranged from, I'm going to say, Love It to Death up until Welcome to My Nightmare. Like those records were like the core. He had some other stuff, but that was like his core Alice right there. And that's what I grew up with. And then for me, getting into the Alice solo stuff was more like Feed My Frankenstein and Man Behind the Mask and stuff like that, which a lot of that was introduced to me through movies and movie soundtracks and things like that. So that was kind of my introduction to Alice, away from the stuff I grew up listening to that my dad had introduced me to. To the best, I'm sure at some point he may have owned it, but this record isn't something I was exposed to until a lot later when I was a pretty hardcore Alice fan. I wanted to hear everything that was available, and unfortunately I did.
I had pretty much made my way through the catalog. My entry point was From the Inside, 1978 was when that was released. I got a chance to see that, the concert to support that, which was pretty amazing. And so it started there and then rapidly bridged out to everything. And as new stuff came out, And then I had all the Alice stuff except these first two, which were hard to get because they're, I don't think they're in print. Back in the day, kids, I know that not too many people listening will be familiar with these concepts of record stores. And I think I may have mentioned this on a past Nurture and Support. I loved to go to record stores to the cutout section where when they had albums that were no longer in print, that they had made too many of, and they couldn't sell them, they would apparently take them in stacks and take a bandsaw and cut like a corner off the album or cut a little slot in the top of the album, not enough to damage the record, but to kind of indicate on the cover that this is not real merchandise. This is something we're trying to get rid of. And you could go to the cutout section and get all kinds of blood rock and all kinds of fun stuff. And that's where you had to find Easy Action and Pretty's for You.
Yeah, and actually, I can throw, this isn't Alice Cooper related, but if anybody's interested, I know the reason that they do that.
And why would that be?
Records. So when they have too many copies left of a record, they'll do a like bargain basement stock sell-off to record stores. So instead of the record stores buying it either on consignment or buying them in bulk at a discounted rate, they got these records for next to nothing. So they would take huge quantities of them to spread out, especially if it was a chain store. They might take thousands of these records off of the record label's hands. But in exchange for that bargain basement price that they got, the record label was not allowed to count those sell-offs towards the record sales. So that's why they would cut that merchandise. Later with CDs, what they would do is they would actually cut out the barcode on the back of them. They would have a hole punch or drill press that would go right through the jewel case and through the barcode.
Cool. I knew there was a reason, but
yeah,
I just thought it was just like mutilating me. You are not a good album. I'm going to mark you as not a good album.
It's the fuck this record rack.
Yeah, that's right.
I had to make sure we got our explicit tag.
That's right. Yeah, thanks for that. That's always helpful. I can kind of count on it. I've kind of preset the defaults at this point in time.
But yeah, that's actually what it's for. Because there was a lot of stuff going on, especially at that time when they started. Gold and platinum records were something that record labels used to do as an internal reward system for artists. And then once they started actually using that to promote records, they had to come up with a standardized system for it, which of course every record label did and still does cheat whenever they can. So one of the ways to do that was to sell off, you know, do stock sell-offs and say like, we just sold 20,000 copies of Pretty's for You, but you know, they got half a cent for every record or whatever they sold them off for. So that's when the Recording Industry Association stepped in and it's like, no, these don't count as sales. So that's where those cut records come in.
So we're doing our best not to talk about this album.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like I just killed a lot of time and not actually talked about the record, which is how I feel about it.
So psychedelic.
I hate to say that because I love Alice and so do you, but yeah, good.
Yeah, it's not good. It'll be interesting as we go into the, because these two are kind of always treated as a group, Pretty's for You and Easy Action, but I have kind of somewhat different opinions of the two, but this one's a tough listen. I said it's psychedelic and it's not, you get none of the famous Alice Cooper snarl that will make its way basically when we get to Love It to Death. If I were to write a one sentence summary of this album, it would be songs that don't live up to the awesomeness of their titles. So let me, for the folks listening, if you haven't made it through Pretty's for You, many of us haven't, let me give you the song list, and there's a lot of them. But here, this is the track listing for Pretty's for You. Titanic Overture, 10 Minutes Before the Worm, Swing Low, Sweet Cheerio, Two Day Mueller, Living, Fields of Regret, No Longer Umpire, Levity Ball, BB on Mars, Reflected, Applebush, Earwings to Eternity, and Changing Arranging. So that's the track list. Probably my biggest quibble with this album, and I have many, but my biggest one is in this period, there was also a song, and I think you can still find it on YouTube, called Nobody Likes Me. That's a pretty good song. It's goofy, but it's a pretty good song. That was in this era, and they were playing at this time, but it, for whatever reason, did not make this album or any future. I mean, eventually made it in his one of his box sets. We finally got Nobody Likes Me.
That was the Life and Crimes of Alice Cooper, right?
Yep. So we finally got that, and we finally got Look at You Over There Ripping the Sawdust Out of My Teddy Bear from the Special Forces album, which were, these are the two songs I had been waiting to Oh, and Can't Sleep or The Clowns Will Eat Me. These are, you know, so that box set is pretty much worth it. But that's not what we're talking about today.
It's funny you say that, just to not talk about Pretties for You longer. The box set for me was worth the price of admission for the Monster Dog songs.
I love the Monster Dog songs.
I absolutely love both of those songs. I love that movie.
Yeah, I don't love the movie so much. I love the songs.
I do. I absolutely love that movie. I watch it pretty frequently, like at least a few times a year.
Yeah, I'm a big Alice fan, and I so desperately wanted to enjoy it. And I was just, so Alice, in a big stretch, plays a rock star in Monster Dog. And so we're treated to two videos of, before, I can't remember that guy's name now. I think he may have actually gone by Vince something, but I have to go back.
Yeah, it's Vince something.
And Identity Crises is a wonderful video and a wonderful song.
And the movie actually opens with the video for that song. That is the opening sequence of the movie.
Yeah, and I had high hopes after seeing that to say, this is going to be fine entertainment, and not so much for me. So as we continue to desperately avoid Pretties for You.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, this is the best review of Pretties for You because we're telling you other Alice stuff that's way better.
Yeah, it's good stuff coming. So just a couple of my observations. So Reflected, of course, Reflected is the later on Billion Dollar Babies, Elected comes out. And Elected is a reworking of this song. And you hear really a lot of the core components of Elected and Reflected, just done about a billion times better in Elected than in Reflected. It's still kind of the song, so it's pretty good. I did that, and I did actually, there's actually one song on this that I did like, and that's No Longer Umpire. Possibly because it was only 2 minutes long, and so it's over short. That, I think that helped. A lot of stuff, a lot of staccato, either staccato vocals, lots of key changes. There's sometimes Captain Beefheart-esque intros. There's one song, Applebush, which if you get a chance to listen to Applebush, and the cool thing is you can go to YouTube and search on Pretties for You and get the full shooting match. Go to Applebush and listen to it. And if you're an XTC fan, listen to Applebush. That could absolutely have been an XTC song.
Yeah, I was going to say, to add to not actually talking about the record, but talking about it in a vague sense, it is available on all the major streaming sites now as well. So if you subscribe to Apple Music or Spotify or anything like that, you could theoretically listen to this album. I'm not saying you should, but you could listen to it.
But a lot of the names are pretty awesome.
They really are. And for me, like I really think you summed it up kind of in the beginning. Like, this is a stab at a psychedelic rock record, which was the big thing at the time, of course. It makes sense. I wasn't aware that they had spent some time with Pink Floyd, but that completely makes sense. This to me sounds like a newish garage type band who hasn't really found their own footing yet, who's allowing themselves to be heavily influenced by what's around them. In that case, something like Pink Floyd or Frank Zappa, but not actually hitting the mark. It's ill-fitting for them. And it's not even just like, you could sit there and pick it apart and say, even with Syd Barrett era Pink Floyd, and say, well, it doesn't work because Pink Floyd was a more technical band, or it doesn't work because, you know, Zappa was willing to go in crazier directions and more artsy and things like that. But really, it's not even anything to do with the technical precision or anything along those lines. It's really just, it doesn't work for them. It doesn't suit them. It doesn't fit them. And it's a shame because two records from this point, they kill it, and it's amazing, and it becomes the Alice Cooper that you and I both love. So it's a weird stepping stone that I think a lot of bands go through that maybe just aren't recorded at that point in their careers.
When they got a lot less LA and a lot more Detroit, the MC5 kind of in the Stooges influence and that kind of stuff. Yeah, what a huge difference in terms of sales, in terms of quality of music, whatever will come up after these first two.
Well, and quality is a big point too, because I think it would be easy to listen to this record and dismiss it as a failed attempt at a psychedelic record, because I mean, certainly it's not on par with what Pink Floyd was doing even at that time in the Syd Barrett era or anything like that musically. But the thing is, like, they're excellent musicians. It's not that they couldn't do something like that. It's like I said, it just doesn't work for them. It's somebody trying something that just isn't a natural fit for them.
Yeah, and I was doing some research prior to the show just on the album in general. It's kind of a fascinating story and a lot of the pieces of it, but they were not prepared, shockingly enough. They were not prepared. As they laid down these tracks, there were mistakes. There were some things that they wanted to clean up, and they kind of said, they were kind of getting rushed through the studio to get this done. You know, Zapp had bailed on them. They had a couple other people in there. And Herb Cohen was saying, don't worry about it. We'll fix it in the mix. We'll fix it in the mix. And so they never did. And so there, it's rough. It's rough in a lot of places. I mean, but you do see, you start to see some of the creative juices and just very, you know, I've always felt that Alice has been unappreciated as he's a very, very clever lyricist and song titler. And a lot of his work, Michael Bruce carried a lot of the weight on the music along with some of the other guys, but Alice was always pretty heavily involved in the lyrics and the song titles and all that. So you get 10 minutes before the worm, which I found out was based on the fact that I've heard the phrase, the early bird gets the worm. Well, how early does the bird need to be there to get that worm? 10 minutes before the worm is their theory on that's how long, that's how early the bird needs to get there. And then BB on Mars is this concept of tiny little copper ball on top of a great big red ball. BB on Mars. Kind of interesting, kind of trippy.
For me, like, I don't know how you feel about the more, like, psychedelic stuff that was coming out at that time. I really like Zappa and Beefheart and all that kind of stuff. I like Pink Floyd a lot. Some of the weirder stuff that the Beach Boys got into when they were, like, doing drugs and were better musicians because of it. I know people hate saying stuff like that, but it's true. Because I don't want it to sound like, go out and do drugs, kids, you'll be a better musician. But you probably will. And just listen to the Beach Boys. And
public service message brought to you by Squat Cobbler.
If that doesn't get us some endorsement deals, I don't know what will. But, I mean, you have to, like, I think that this is an important lesson because it's a weird, like, it's what's cool about this record is it's a glimpse at a band who isn't there yet, who becomes this incredible band. So, like, it's almost a chance, like, it would have been great if Love It to Death was the first record and then this came out in its entirety as part of a box set, so that you could kind of see the progression of the band, because this to me sounds more like a demo. It's a band just trying things out and finding their footing. It doesn't sound like the first album so much as it does a demo to me. Whereas, like, for me, Love It to Death sounds like the first album.
Yeah, it was so much more textured because there are about like six songs on this that it just feels like the core of it's the same concept, slightly repackaged and in terms of the sound and these types of things. And it's this weird psychedelic LA heavy kind of thing. That's the way that goes. So I'm trying to think if we want to go off on any other tangents on this.
We told kids to do drugs.
We talked around
this record a lot.
Yeah, we did. So I'm thinking the t-shirt, let me pitch this to you before, because now we can, if you've made it through here, you're about to hear Mike's big t-shirt news. But, you know, we may be scooping it with secondary t-shirt news, which is whatever Mike's going to talk about is cool. But we have come up in during the show with this concept of Cinco Squatto. I think the big of the t-shirt, the big text is Cinco Squatto. And then underneath in kind of a smaller text, maybe with an asterisk, maybe not, do drugs, play better.
I like it. I like it a lot. That is an excellent, excellent approach to this. Do drugs, play better.
So that is t-shirt secondary. Mike, why don't you share your news?
So what I was going to say, and I'll get into more details with this with Kelly off the air, we're going to start, we've reached a point where we need to make more merchandise just for the band and for different things like that. And obviously I want to extend this to the podcast as well. Reached a point, I've been making these Reverend Mike t-shirts for a long, long time. And we've been selling these for probably 10 years now. It's costing so much now to manufacture shirts, and especially shirts that are multiple colors and double-sided and things like that. We hit a point where we have to charge like $40-$45 for a shirt to make a profit off of them, just because it's getting to be so much money to manufacture and ship and do all that kind of stuff, which to me is unacceptable. I hate when bands do that kind of stuff, and I don't want to be that band. So we've decided we're going to start manufacturing our own merchandise from this point forward. So the equipment is in place and all that kind of stuff, and we're going to start making t-shirts and making other types of merchandise and things like that. Obviously, we want to expand that to all the podcasts that we're involved with as well, so we can make Squat Cobbler merchandise, Nurture and Support merchandise, all that kind of stuff.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll need to talk about it off the air, but I'm leaning pretty heavily to Cinco Squatto.
I think that's great.
As the first Squat Cobbler merch, but there'll be many more over a background of explicit or something like that. Okay,
I like that there's one clean one. So then you can go through and find the one clean. That'll be a good like trivia question when we do like episode 100 or something like that. Yeah, like, what was the one episode that was clean?
Yeah, I have a hunch. I think it'll be one. Okay, gang. So we've talked to you kind of sort of about Pretty's for You. Come back in a future date. Talk about the next one, which is Easy Action, before we start to get into much more enjoyable territory.
The real Alice Cooper record.
Cooper after that. And for those of you scoring at home, and we'll put this on the blog post, Mike and my list side by side. Number one album for Mike so far is Pretty's for You.
It will not stay there beyond this week.
Number one album for me is Pretty's for You. And I have a feeling, I don't know, I think once we get about four or five albums deep, that's where our list might start to differ. But I have a feeling as we go through these first three, there's not going to be a lot of variation between our list.
No, not really.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to keep doing this. There's many, many Alice Cooper albums to go through. And then Mike and I will need to discuss offline whether we want to do the box set as well. And we'll also keep coming back with Squat Cobblers in the more traditional Squat Cobbler format as well. So. Hope you enjoyed it, and thanks for listening. I love the Monster Dog songs.